So I'd like to share this morning about our work ethic that we have as Christians. You know, a lot of us have been, you know, we've been blessed with a heritage of working hard. And, you know, we've been taught by example. We've been trained as young children to work hard. And we're taught to get in there and get the job done. You know, not to do it in a slipshod manner, but, you know, to do it to the best of our ability. And growing up, I was taught that if a job was worth doing, we should do it right and not halfway. And I've maybe attained to that sometimes. Sometimes I haven't done so well in that. But I remember, you know, like when we put a fence post in when I was working with my dad, and then I did it later on, putting a fence post wasn't as simple as just digging a hole, dropping the post in, and then shoveling dirt back in. You know, first the hole had to be big enough around so that you could get around it to pack the dirt, you know, later on. And the sides, they weren't jagged. They had to be perfectly straight going down. And when you got down to the bottom was cleaned out. It was nice and level. It was packed hard. And if the hole was supposed to be 24 inches, you know, we get the tape measure out and measure it and sight across. If it was 22 inches, that wasn't good enough. It had to be down to 24 inches. It had to be the right depth. And then when it came to setting the post, you know, the bottom 2 inches, my dad taught me, was the most important to make sure that the post didn't slip in the hole later on when you know, tighten the, hook the fence up and that sort of thing to it. So we would that bottom 2 inches was packed really hard with a digging iron. And then, you know, we'd pack it as we were putting the dirt back in. And by the time we were done, if you did it right, usually you had to add some extra gravel or something like that, because you ended up with a post that was, I mean, the dirt around the post was packed harder than the dirt, the original dirt that we had dug out. So it was a skill that, you know, that I use in life now even. It's been beneficial to me. But as youngsters, as we were learning diligent, you know, we had to learn diligent, to be diligent in digging that hole. Sometimes it was hard. It was really hard digging holes, hard dirt. And diligence is more than hard work and doing a good job. It's staying with the job to its completion with tenacity. It might mean that you had, you know, you might have had 10, 20, 30 holes to dig, but you stayed with it till you got that job done. It's diligence is being persistent when the going gets tough. You know, you run into roots, you run into rocks or hard dirt, and you stuck it out. Diligence is being flexible. You know, normally you mark where your posts are, and you want them a certain distance apart and in a straight line and that sort of thing. But from time to time, you might run into a rock that's bigger than you can handle, and you might have to shift it a little bit. And sometimes you need to be flexible and maybe stretch out of your comfort zone a little bit. The Bible, I'll just mention one person in the Bible that was diligent. Jacob was a man of diligence, and he exemplified diligence in the story of when he was leaving his father-in-law. And that story is kind of recapped, and it's told in more detail, but in Genesis 31, 38 to 42, it kind of gives a recap of that story, of how Jacob was taken advantage of time and time again. And he worked for 14 years for, well, 7 years for his first wife, and then 7 years, and then he had to work another 7 years till he finally got the wife he was really after. But he worked a total of 14 years for his wives, and then he worked 6 more years for his rightfully due flocks that were due to him. And, you know, Jacob, he worked through the heat of the day. He worked through the cold nights, cold rainy nights. I'm sure there's nights where he didn't feel like being out there watching the sheep, but, you know, he was protecting the flocks as they were lambing, the sheep and the goats. And then on top of that, his wages, the Bible says, were changed 10 times. But he remained diligent during that whole time. The Bible says he was abused and he was taken advantage of by his father-in-law. And his father-in-law would have taken his flocks too. But it says that God saw Jacob's abuse and his diligence. And then God came to Laban, his father-in-law, and he warned him. He said, you know, leave Jacob alone. And he kind of gave Laban a warning. He didn't say exactly what he would do to him, but he warned him, I think, in a dream or a vision. So scattered throughout the Bible, we're told and we're taught by example to be diligent in all areas of our lives. In Romans 12:8, in reference to our gifts, leaders are told to lead with diligence. And then in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 7, where Paul was encouraging the believers to excel in their giving, he commended them on different characteristics that they had, which diligence was one of. He said, Therefore, as ye have abounded in everything, in faith, in utterance, in knowledge, and in all diligence, and in your love to us, see that ye abound in this grace also. Because he was talking about the grace of giving generously. So we're supposed to abound in diligence along with love and knowledge and also in giving generously. So the Corinthians, we know, they were known for their diligence. In 2 Peter 3:14, we're encouraged to be diligent, to live in peace, to be pure and blameless until Christ's return. So in other words, we're supposed to, we need to work hard, we need to live in peace and be blameless. So all of us have work to do until Christ returns. We're told in Matthew 24, 36 to 51 by Jesus that we're to be faithful, or we could use the word diligence, we're to be faithful unto his return. Verse 46 says, blessed is that servant whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing, being faithful and working hard and being diligent. And then for my key verses, I'll turn to it just a little bit here. Paul also admonishes us in Hebrews 6, verses 9 to 12, to labor and to work with love by caring for believers as well as those that we minister to. So let's go ahead and read that. Hebrews 6, verses 9 to 12, if you want to turn there. Okay, starting in Hebrews 6, starting in verse 9, reading to verse 12. But, beloved, we are persuaded better things of you and things that accompany salvation, though we thus speak. For God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love, which ye have showed toward his name, and that ye have ministered to the saints and do minister. And we desire that every one of you do show the same diligence and full assurance of hope until the end, that ye be not slothful, but followers of them who through faith and patience inherit the promise. So we're told at the end in verse 12 there, not to be lazy. We're not supposed to be slothful. In our work of love and in ministering, we're supposed to be diligent in our work of love and ministering. So, I think it's very important that we remember that, you know, being diligent in our daily work is important, but it's also important that we're diligent as we work for the Lord and in our ministry also. So I want to tell a little story about an incident that happened to me when I was not diligent and when I wasn't faithful in the work of loving and caring about another person. There was this, the Lord, I guess, he kind of rebuked me in my spirit by using the words of the very person I was trying to love and I was trying to be a friend to. I was like I said, I was trying to love and trying to minister this older fella, and it didn't turn out at all the way I was planning it. I wasn't really planning it. It was just part of life, I guess. And anyhow, let me go and give a little bit of background as to how the relationship started. It was soon after we moved here to Tennessee is when I met my neighbor, Mr. Mayfield. And we both had an interest in trapping, so that's how I met him originally. And he was a POW during World War II, and he had just lost his wife the year before. And so it was evident, as I learned to know him, that he was a lonely man. And so I started visiting him and started learning to know him. And we hit it off right away with our common interest in different things. I mean, he had bees. He loved to garden, had a lot of fruit trees, and he liked to squirrel hunt, which I also liked to do, did a fair amount at that time. And in fact, he gave me a dog that was a squirrel dog. It was a little black and white feist pup that he gave to me that he was raising. And so over the next 2 years, he took me on his trap line, and he taught me different things about trapping and showed me how to make sets and that sort of thing. But unfortunately, there's another thing I remember he taught me. He taught me how to take a squirrel and just make one cut in the squirrel, and you could pretty much skin the squirrel by that one cut. I never got as good as he was at it, but unfortunately that fall, as he was getting older, and he had a stroke that partially paralyzed his one side. So they took him to the hospital, and he got word to me that that he wanted me to pull his traps on his trap line. It was in November, and so I knew where all the traps were at on the creek. So I went out and I pulled his traps for him, and put him in his house then. But anyhow, his stay at the hospital extended for months, and so he was in Knoxville for several months. He was doing rehab and he was doing therapy. And when he came home, he was pretty much confined to his wheelchair and in a walker. And he relied heavily on his daughter and home health, to take care of him. And it was really hard on an outdoorsman like he was. He was, like I said, just a big outdoorsman, loved the outdoors. And so I continued to visit him regularly. I'd take the children with me, and we would, when we go, he would always, when the children came, he would always pop popcorn for them, and that was kind of his thing that he did whenever we came with the children. So during the next trapping season, I would stop it the following, as it went through, I guess into the next year. It was another year then. Next trapping season, I would stop in and I would tell him, what I caught, and then we would visit. And eventually, as he got a little bit worse, he was moved to a nursing home here in Athens. And so he wasn't quite as close by, and I was busy, and I was doing busy, so to speak. And I got a little bit lazy in visiting him, and I slowly didn't visit him quite as much and didn't keep the relationship up like it had been before. So I was slowly becoming not diligent and not faithful in the ministry that I was involved in, even though I can't really say I called it a ministry. It was just, he was a good friend, and I was loving him. But I continued to keep track of him and how he was doing, through his neighbors and my neighbors and his mutual friends that I knew. So I was kind of keep track of him. And I would visit him that first year that he moved to the nursing home, from time to time, but it just wasn't as often. And he would, sometimes he would call me up on the phone and he would want me to come over and watch a game with him and visit. But eventually I stopped going to do that. And the next spring, which was his last spring, his daughter brought him by our house to buy a tomato plant, which he planted it had been his last spring. But anyhow, that spring she came by the house and bought with him, and they bought a tomato plant, and they planted it in a pot, and then they set that outside his window there at the nursing home, and he would, that was his way of gardening at that time. So one summer evening, our church had been singing at Life Care in Athens, and on the way home, someone said, I'm not sure who it was, someone in the car there said, why don't we stop in and see Mr. Mayfield and just see how he's doing again, since we were right there. So when we got to his room there, we all went in as a family. He was getting ready for bed, but his CNA was in there, helping him get ready for bed, and he told the CNA, he said, can you wait to get me ready for bed till a little bit later so I can visit with us? And so she did. She told him she would come back later, and it was obvious that that Mr. Mayfield, he was glad to see us, and he had we had a nice visit, and he made microwave popcorn for the children. He took us out, with his walker. I think we went in a wheelchair, and we wheeled him out there, and he showed us his tomato plant that was growing outside his window, and we caught up with what was happening in our lives. He asked about what was happening, that sort of thing, as well as we talked about what was happening in his life. And as we were leaving, the rest of the family had gone on ahead. And as I was telling him goodbye, his response to me was, it's going to be forever seared in my mind of what he said to me. And his words were, and I wrote them down exactly what he said. This is exactly what he said. He said, "Don't wait so long next time to come back and see me." He said, I waited and I waited, but you never came. It's been over a year since you've been here. And as I stood there, I mean, you can just imagine how I felt. This man that that I put my life into, and here I'd let him down. I really felt like a heel, like I had failed him as a friend. But, I apologized to him, and I told him I was sorry. But it really was true. It had been a long time. maybe not a year, but it was a long time. It was way too long. I was busy, or so I thought, but it was especially long for someone that was sitting in a nursing home. And I'd become lazy in my work of love. So hard work and diligence, it is, it's important that we learn hard work as children, as adults, but we need to also somehow mesh that with our ministry that we have. We need to be diligent in our ministry also. It's doubly so in our personal ministry and in our church work. Becoming lazy and slothful should not be a part of a Christian's life. So as we learn to be faithful, starting with the small areas of life, it's maybe digging a post hole. It might be something else. You learn to be diligent. But God will entrust us with more, as Jesus said in Luke 16:10. "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much." And then Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, I'm going to spend a little bit of time in there talking about laziness. It speaks about laziness quite a bit in Proverbs. Chapter 10, verse 5, it tells us that the lazy sleep when they should be harvesting. In chapter 20, verse 13, it tells us that sleeping will bring us to poverty. And we know that our sleep habits do have an effect on our work production the next day, whether it's in our attitude, whether it's a late start at work, whether it's being tired. Sleep does have an effect on us, and Proverbs talks about that. It's not something unique for our age, this thing of sleeping in. It was it's been a problem for a long time. Chapter 6, verse 6 and verse 9 and 10 in Proverbs says, y'all are familiar with the verse, go to the ant, thou sluggard. Well, also it says in verse 9 and 10 that the sluggard is to learn from the ants. And then it says in verse 9 and 10, how long will you sleep, O sluggard? Or in other words, lazy bones is what some translations say. When will you rise out of your sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands. So, you know, Solomon knew what we're going through because he saw it in people in his life. Rest is important, and I'm going to touch on rest in a little bit, but not when we should be working. We don't need to be resting when we should be working and taking our responsibilities. Chapter 12, verse 27 tells us that the lazy person wastes, but the diligent make use of what he has. You know, we live in an age of use it once and pitch it, but we need to be careful not to waste the resources that we spent time in acquiring. Our grandparents, you know, they learned out of necessity when growing up through the Depression era not to waste the resources that they had. Because I remember as a young boy, my dad, when he was building a barn, the nails that were bent, you know, they were tossed down to us. We were down, you know, playing or, you know, trying to help out where we could, or they pulled nails out of a board. And we would straighten those nails up and they would get pitched into the box again and they were reused again. Waste is not a part of a lazy person or of a diligent person. And the lazy person is full of excuses as to why he can't work. For example, the person in Proverbs 22, verse 13 claims that there's a lion out in there in the streets, and if I go outside, I might get killed. Not really, but that's the excuse he uses. And it's, you know, it kind of sounds silly to us, but don't we also rationalize our laziness in the same way? We make excuses as to why we can't do things. Maybe we don't see a lion, but maybe it's the excuse like in chapter 20, verse 4, might hit a little closer to you like it does to me sometimes, where it says, it's too cold to go out and plow. You know, a lot of times as winter's coming on, it's a little bit easier to sit inside where it's a little warmer or to wait to go outside, but oftentimes in colder climates, plowing needed to be done in the fall and early winter in preparation for the spring planting. And I think this verse is telling us that we need to be diligent in doing the things at the proper time in our work and in our ministry. We need to plan and anticipate our future needs and prepare for them the same as the ant does. And oftentimes, the lazy person, he causes his own problems in life through his lack of planning and his lack of action and preparation, and he's just being irresponsible. Proverbs 21, verse 5 and 25, verse 25, suggest a way to avoid laziness. You know, the lazy person often desires, you know, he wants things in life, he desires things in life, but he tries to take shortcuts to get to his perceived goal, and then these shortcuts, they only cause more problems in life. Let me read that in those two verses, Proverbs 21, verse 5 and 25. Verse 5, the thoughts of the diligent tend only to plentitudinous, but of everyone that is hasty, only to want. And then verse 25, it says, the desire of the slothful killeth him. You know, he wants things, for his hands refuse to labor. So instead of being hasty and trying to take shortcuts, we need to think through our goals and then lay out a plan and follow it with hard, persistent work and stick with it. So in thinking through those desires and goals, we need to be sure that we're not chasing a fantasy of our imagination. Sometimes we have these high ideals, these fantasies that we imagine that we want to do. We need to make sure that we're not, just chasing a fantasy of our imagination. Proverbs 12:11 talks a little bit about that. But the steady hard work of a diligent man, I think, will win out every time. Just the steady hard work of a diligent hardworking man. And then there's rest. Taking a break from work. Rest, like I said, is not a bad thing as long as it's not at the right, as long as you don't try to be resting when you should be working. Rest is a good thing, taking a break. Having a planned leisure time is, in fact, encouraged in the Bible. God himself rested from work in Genesis 2, verse 2, where it says, on the seventh day, God ended his work which he made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And then in Exodus 20, verse 10, the fourth commandment which God wrote down on the stone, we're told to rest from our everyday physical work on the Sabbath day. And then it's recorded in Mark 6:31 how Jesus encouraged his disciples to take a break from the crowds and to rest and to renew themselves. Rest is important. Then Jesus also set us an example in Luke 5, verse 16, where it says, he withdrew himself into the wilderness and prayed. And if you think about it, if Jesus needed to withdraw himself and go into the wilderness and pray, how much more do we need the solitude and rest, the planned rest, possibly, and just to go off and just to rest. Just like God put boundaries on his work to rest, we also, we need to put boundaries on around our work. The other side of the ditch from laziness is being a workaholic, just as, that alcohol is an addiction to an alcoholic, so work is an addiction to a workaholic. We can become so engrossed in work that we don't have time for other things. And a workaholic may need an accountability group along with set boundaries, just like an alcoholic does sometimes. They need to realize that it's okay to value our work, but we need to treasure our home life, our family life, and our friendships, and our personal time with God. Because oftentimes, the first thing to suffer of someone that's working too much, that's a workaholic, the first thing to suffer when we work too much is our devotional life. And then our families suffer, and then our time with the church in general tends to suffer also. So why do we even work? Because when you read in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 18 to 23, Solomon, he despairs that work is disappointing, it's vanity, that all that work causes is sorrow and grief. When you die, all the work that you've done during life, the possibility that, it's going to be turned into nothing likely is high. All that you work for, you could lose it all after, after you're gone, you're not, but you do lose it when you die, but after you're gone, what you've worked for, your possessions could all but just be tossed aside by the next generation. And it's true that when all we do is to work primarily to please ourselves, it will lead to grief like Solomon talked about. But if we follow God's guidelines and work and toil with the purpose to please God, then that will lead us to joy. It gives purpose in life if that's our purpose, to please God instead of trying to please ourselves. Another reason why we need to work is to represent Christ well. In Colossians 3, verse 17, we're told that whatsoever we do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus. So as we work, we need to represent Christ well. We need to do all in the name of the Lord Jesus. And then our work for the Lord is never useless, and it will have eternal results. And I'd like to close with the words of encouragement from 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58. And it says there, "Be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord."